was the head of the Breyers community here in Washington Heights. He has a beautiful sefer on Chumash called Ma'ayan Beis HaShoeva. Looks like this. And Rabbi Shimon Schwab in the back has some beautiful insights on Megillas Esther. So we did some of them on Sunday for those who are here. But each piece is its own piece. So if you aren't here Sunday, it's all good. Yes. Yeah. If you've ever seen the volume Rabbi Schwab on prayer in English, or the Hebrew Iyun Tefillah, it's the same Rabbi Schwab. Yeah, he was a rabbi just a couple blocks from here. Okay, so let's learn. Let's learn. Okay, we'll start from the first piece on Tav Ayin Dalet. Anyone who missed the first year, it's online if you want to catch up. Some really beautiful insights. Not going to do every piece, obviously, but we'll do some of the highlights. Okay, Esther says to Mordechai, Lech knos es kol ha-Yehudim ha-nimtzaim b'shushan v'tzumu alai. Esther says, gather together all of the people of Shushan, please fast on my behalf, because I'm about to go to the king. U'b'chein avo el ha-melech asher lo kadas. I'm about to go into Melech Ahasuerosh without permission. And that's very scary, because Esther says, v'kasher avadati avadati. We read it in the very sad tune. Kasher avaditi, avaditi. Esther says, this is it. This is game over for me. In what sense is it game over? So the pashup shot, you would think, is it's game over because Ahasuerus might chop her head off. Ahasuerus might kill her for entering the king's throne room without permission. But on a spiritual level, it's also kasher avaditi, avaditi. Esther was married to her cousin Mordechai. What's the halacha if, God forbid, a woman was raped? What's the halacha with regard to her relationship with her husband? Is she still permitted to her husband? She slept with another man. It was against her will. So the halacha is clear that, of course, she's still permitted to her husband. There is one very tragic exception to that if she's the wife of a Kohen. You should never know from such things. What happens if a woman, if she chooses to be with another man, she's an Eishes Ish, she's a married woman, she chooses to be with another man, you know what the halacha is? You need to know what the halacha is. I mean, hopefully you'll never hear about this in your life. Right? But a woman who, God forbid, has an adulterous relationship is no longer permitted to her husband. They're not allowed to live together anymore. They're not allowed to even be alone in a room together anymore because they're not permitted to each other. Right? She becomes forbidden to him, and essentially there's no other option other than to divorce at that point. And obviously in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, you have an Isha Sota, which is pretty serious stuff. So says Rashi, in the name of the Medrash, Asher Lo Kadas, I'm going to the king, Shalo Kadat, not in accordance with the law. What law was Esther referring to? Shad Ata Ba'ones Va'achsha Baratzon. Until now, every time I was forced to come to Ahasuerosh, when I was summoned to the royal bedroom, when Ahasuerus wanted to be intimate with me, she was forced. Esther was held against her will. But now I'm choosing to go to Ahasuerus. I'm submitting myself before him. Again, it sounds like any time you got in Ahasuerus's Dalet Amos, you were expected to be intimate with him. I mean, she's not going to have it. She's going to ask him a question. She's not going to the bedroom. She's going to the throne room. Right? But by coming before Ahasuerus, by presenting herself before Ahasuerus, she said, that's basically me choosing him. And therefore, what's going to be with my relationship with Mordechai? Kasher avadati avadati. Kasher avadati mi beis abba oved mimcha. Right? Esther says, I'm going to be lost. I'm going to be forbidden to you. Shemeach shav sha'ani baratzon niv'elis la'akum ani asur alecha. Now that I am willingly having an intimate relationship with this non-Jewish king, I will be prohibited to you. Here's the question. The question is the following. V'cheinu b'megillah, that's what the Gemara brings in Maseches Megillah as well. Explanation of this pasuk. V'rabim makshin l'fi hamuva mefarshim b'shem hazohar HaKadosh. Now, Rav Schwab was not a Kabbalist, nor was he a Hasidish Rebbe. But Rav Schwab says there's a famous Zohar about what actually happened when Esther was taken by Ahasuerus. The Zohar says, where it's underlined, Sheshida nizdam nelo l'Ahasuerus b'makom Esther. That every time Ahasuerus wanted to be intimate with Esther, Hashem did not allow the pure and righteous and holy Esther to be taken advantage of by this disgusting lowly king. So you know what would happen? What does the Zohar say? A shin dalet, a shade. Some type of angelic, maybe demonic spirit in the form of Esther took her place. So Ahasuerus thought that he was being intimate with Esther, but really Hashem was sending, you know, a clone, an angelic clone of Esther to take her place, so that Esther would not be defiled. And therefore, says the Zohar, Esther actually slept with Ahasuerus zero times. They were never intimate together. Every time she was summoned, a shade, a female shade, would take her place. He never had intimate relations with her, only with the female shade. So Esther Schwab, a very interesting question. First of all, if you never heard this idea before, now you have. Right? It's good to know this Zohar. Very deep twist in the story, important to think about. Hashem protected Esther, the righteous Esther, that she shouldn't be defiled by this lowly king. Right? But the question becomes even stronger when you go back now to the Rashi and the Gemara, which said that Esther says, now I'm going to Ahasuerus, and this is it. Until now, I've been forced, but now it's going to... Well, what do you mean? Until now, even when you were forced, it wasn't really you. So now, when you go willingly to Ahasuerus, it's also not going to really be you. Hashem will send the female shade to take your place. So explains Rav Schwab, where it's underlined, Vinira. She'inyan ha'neishin is damna lo shida b'mekomba hayarak al yidei zeh mashalo holcha Esther elav elavonis gama. So Rav Schwab gives a very simple answer, but it's an important answer. He says, why did Hashem create that nes? Why did Hashem create this nes for Esther? Right? And the reason is because Esther didn't want to be with Ahasuerus. You have to understand, Esther could have gotten very into this position that she was in. I was selected by the king. I don't want to associate with my fellow Jews. It's only going to get me into trouble. She could have strayed from the world of Torah Yiddishkeit. She could have bought into her life in the palace, but she didn't. She was repulsed by Ahasuerus. She saw herself as a captive. And because she saw herself as a captive, because she was always forced to go to him, she never went to him willingly, came in shalo haya b'halichasa afilu nidnud kal shel ratzon. She thought, you know why Hashem sends the shade to take my place, the shade to take my place? It's because I've never, for a second, considered it a privilege, an opportunity, something to delight in or to enjoy being in this palace. She hated every second of it. There was not the slightest nidnud kal. Nidnud kal means like the slightest shred of desire. Al kein zachsa l'nezeh shalot tistarech lehiba'el keneged ritzona. So because she 100% refused to be with Ahasuerus, so Hashem protected her. Because when a person is 100% with Hashem, Hashem is 100% with you. Esther now is choosing to go to Ahasuerus. She's choosing for the holiest reason in the world. But because there's an element of ratzon, because a little bit, she's walking into that room, aval achshav she'achlita laleches beratzon letovas haklal, Esther's just being realistic. She says, I know there are no guarantees that Hashem's going to... Until now, I know exactly why Hashem. I know exactly why until now Hashem sent the shade in my place. You know why? Because I was 100% connected to Hashem. But now she's saying, I'm putting myself out there. Again, obviously for a very holy purpose. Latova saklal, says Rav Schwab. It's for the betterment of Klal Yisrael. But she was afraid. She thought the fact that she was a little bit, the tiniest bit, going beratzon, again, with a very good calculation, but she wasn't sure that Hashem was going to protect her. The end of the story very well may be that Hashem did not allow Ahasuerus to ever be with Esther, which we'll talk about in the next piece that's coming up. But this idea of being 100% with Hashem, I want to share something that I heard from the rabbi of the shul that I spoke in this past Shabbos in Los Angeles, Rabbi David Revach. He told me a beautiful vart Friday night. I had this chassid in his home. He told me a beautiful vart from the altar of Kelm. Such a simple question on the past week's parsha. The Eved Ivri, yeah? The Eved Ivri. Who's the Eved Ivri that we read about this past Shabbos? A Jewish slave. How did he become a slave? He's either very poor or he stole and can't repay. So he's working. It's a form of a way of making money, either to pay back money that he owes, or to just remove himself from his state of poverty. Right? And why do we pierce the Eved Ivri's ear after 6 years if he wants to stay on? Because we say that the ear that heard, the ear, right, Rashi has a couple of pshatim, but the ear that heard at Har Sinai what? Be an Eved to Hashem, and you went and you acquired for yourself an Eved, you heard from Hashem, be an Eved to Hashem, that Hashem should be your master, and you went and acquired for yourself another master, so you didn't hear well at Har Sinai. So the Altar of Kelm asks a very simple question. Does an Eved Ivri have to keep Torah and mitzvahs? He's a Jewish guy. He's a firm guy. He learned in Kollel 10 years. Now, in a momentary lapse of judgment, he stole money, spent it on gambling. He doesn't have the means to repay. Okay? Beis Din says, Nimchar b'gnev asa. He'll be sold for his theft. So now, this very firm guy who had did a serious avera, now he's paying it off, he's working to pay it off. Right? His soul doesn't have it ivri. Does he wear tefillin in the morning? Does he make brachos when he eats food? Does he shake a lulav? Does he hear a shofar? Does he keep Shabbos? Chaver, what's the answer? Yes. Absolutely. He's a Jewish person. He just happens to be working for this guy. So I asked the Altar of Kel, what's the question? Why are you telling me that this person at Har Sinai didn't understand what it means to be an Eved Hashem? Even as an Eved Ivri, he's still an Eved Hashem. He still learns Torah, and he still davens, and he still keeps Shabbos, and he still does mitzvos. He's a Jewish Eved. He's bound by all the rules of Yiddishkeit. He keeps all the mitzvos. So what does the Altar of Kelm say? Anyone know? Try to figure it out based on this piece. You know what the Altar of Kelm says? The fact that he does all those things is beautiful, but he also has another master. And being an Eved Hashem means what? Being totally an Eved Hashem. Being an Eved Hashem means 100%. Not 50% Hashem, 50% my master of flesh and blood. A real Eved Hashem means what? Means being all in with Hashem. So if you keep Torah and keep mitzvos, but you're also mishubad, you're also enslaved to something else, then you're not, in the fullest sense, a true Eved Hashem. So yeah, he keeps Torah, he keeps mitzvos. But we pierce his ear to say, no, you don't understand what it means to be an Eved Hashem. Eved Hashem is not 75% Hashem, 25% someone else. Eved Hashem means 100%. 100%. So I said to Rabbi Ravach, I said, I want to say a new pshat. I asked, I said, can I say a new pshat based on what you just said? I think I have a new pshat in the Shabbos davening. So he said, sure. So I said, we say in the davening, Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko, ki Eved Ne'eman Karasala. Yeah, Moshe is the paradigm of what it means to be an Eved Hashem. Yeah? It's the last Shem Yishmuel. That's the Shem Yishmuel, right next to Reb Shlomo. Second picture, top row on the left. The Shem Yishmuel, the Rebbe of Sokachov. The last piece he has on Chumash, he explains how Moshe Rabbeinu, right, was called Eved Hashem. It sounds like, what? That's the only title you give Moshe? The Torah, at the end of the Torah, calls Moshe an Eved Hashem? That's the best description you have for a Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of his lifetime? So it says the Shem Yishmuel, you have to understand. Yeah, Eved Hashem is a very high level. To be called the true Eved Hashem, that's a very lofty level. That's what the Altar of Kelm is saying. 75%, 25% by someone else, that's not an Eved Hashem. Eved Hashem means I'm kol kulo, I'm entirely dedicated to Hashem. So the Shem Yishmuel says, the fact that Moshe is called a servant of God is the greatest praise in the world. Halavai, halavai, we should get anywhere, you know, close to that. Look at the beginning of Sefer Yoshua. Moshe is called an Eved Hashem. And look what the Mefarshim say there. It's the greatest praise for a person. To be a true Eved Hashem, entirely dedicated to Hashem, is the greatest praise. So I said, maybe that's the pshat. Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko ki Eved Ne'eman karasalo. Moshe rejoiced over the fact that he was an Eved Hashem. Why did Moshe rejoice? So Chaver, stay with me. Try to follow the pieces. So I said that the Maharal of Prague, in his writings on the Agadatha, in Meseches Yevamos, says that Simcha, joy, Mishnechlas Adar Marvin B'Simcha, Simcha is related to Shleimus. Why does the Maharal say that in Maseches Yevamos? Because you know what the Gemara says in Yevamos? Hasharoi below isha, sharoi below simcha. That a person who lives without a spouse lives without true happiness. You're only half a person. You can't reach your full potential of enjoyment of this world. You can't feel a true sense of simcha until a person builds a bais. Right? Daniel Borden, true or not true? You're much more wholesome now that you're married, man. Right? Okay? Until you're married, you're like a bacher. You're not shalim. So that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, if you're not married, you're not really happy. So the Maharal says, apparently happiness is synonymous with what? With shleimus. Because when you meet your spouse, then you complete yourself, and then you can have happiness. So I said, that's the pshat. Yismach Moshe b'mandas chelko. Why was Moshe happy? Because eved neman karasalo. Because he was a true, full eved Hashem. And according to the Altar of Kelm, that's what eved Hashem is. Eved Hashem is not 90% God, 10% someone else. Moshe achieved the title eved Hashem. And if you're a shalem, if you're complete eved Hashem, if you're complete eved Hashem, then you have what to be happy about. And that's what Esther was. Esther, until this point, she saw herself as completely dedicated to Hashem. It was almost not a chiddush that Hashem saved her and sent a shade in her place to be intimate with Ahasuerus. But now where she was straying a little bit, again, for very good reasons, she was choosing to go into Ahasuerus to risk her life on behalf of Klal Yisrael, but she understood there may be a sacrifice here because I'm expressing a ratzon for Ahasuerus. She had to in order to get his attention. And again, we call it an avera lishma. Obviously, her intentions were entirely pure. But she was nervous that what? That Hashem would see this as, a deviation from 100% commitment to God. In the end, Hashem didn't see it that way. Right? In the end, Hashem did protect her, even this last time, as we'll see in the next piece. Vatomer Esther, imal melech tov yavo melech v'haman ayom elamishta asher asisi lo. Esther says to Ahasuerus, if the king is pleased with me, I'd like to invite you and Haman to a party. Why does she invite Haman to the party? Says the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Marasa Esther Shazimna es Haman. Why did Esther invite Haman to the party? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Pachim Tamnalo. Rabbi Eliezer says that she was laying a trap for him. Pachim means a snare. She wanted to trap Haman. She was setting him up to be killed on the spot. And it quotes a pasuk. Rabbi Yeshua Omer mi beis avi alamda. She learned it from her father's house. And again, the Gemara quotes a pasuk. If your enemy is hungry, feed him bread. Right? Meaning, use your enemy's weakness to exploit him. What was Haman's weakness? That he's a big bal gaiva. So Haman doesn't even realize he's walking right into the trap. He thought, oh, look at me, I'm so chashav, I'm invited to the queen's party. He wouldn't even realize that she's setting him up for his downfall. Rabbi Meir Omer kadesh lo yitol eitz avi imrod. Rabbi Meir said she didn't want Haman to find out that Ahasuerus is angry at him, and in desperation Yimrod rebelled against Ahasuerus, right, to try to save his own life. Maybe Haman was also a powerful person. If he gets word that Ahasuerus is looking for him and he's furious, Haman might say, the gig's up, and he's going to rally his own troops to try to overthrow the government. Who knows? So she wanted him right there to be able to kill him on the spot. And the Gemara goes on and on and on with all sorts of explanations and answers as to why she invited them to the party. Ayin sham kol asugya harbe tamim mitanayim v'amorayim. Many opinions from the sages of the Mishnah and the sages of the Gemara, tanayim, amorayim. Ayin sham. The Gemara says, Ashkechei Rabba bar Avua le'Eliyahu. Rabba bar Avua once encountered Eliyahu. And he asked him, it's such a fascinating question, Keman chazya Esther v'avdahachi. So we just said Rabbi Eliezer had an opinion, and Rabbi Yeshua had an opinion, and Rabbi Meir had an opinion, and the Gemara has several other opinions. So one time, Rabbi Bar Avua ran into Eliyahu and said, Eliyahu, by the way, you know things that are beyond this world. Tell me, which of those reasons was extra Esther actually thinking about? Right? Keman chazya Esther v'avdahi. Like, who did Esther see? Like, whose opinion did she contemplate and act accordingly? Meaning, was Esther actually thinking like Rabbi Eliezer, like Rabbi Yeshua, like Rabbi Meir? All sorts of opinions. What was Esther thinking when she decided to invite Haman. So he asked Eliyahu, you're from the world of truth. Tell me, what was Esther actually thinking about? Amar lei, kekulu tanai v'kekulu amorai. Esther had in mind all of these different intentions. Like every Tana said, like every Amora said. Right? Whatever everyone suggested, that's what Esther had in mind when she invited Haman to the party. It says Rav Schwab, top of the left column, V'nir lefarish. Sha'arei hi osa sakol beruach kodesh. How did Esther have, again, all of these ideas in mind? K'mavur b'meseches Megillah, the Gemara says, based on the pasuk, V'tilbash Esther Malchus, Esther dressed herself in Malchus. So the Gemara says, it should say Bigde Malchus, clothing of Malchus. What does it mean Esther dressed herself in Malchus? So the Gemara says, Esther was shrouded, she was enveloped by Ruach HaKodesh. All right, amazing. Esther had Ruach HaKodesh. V'chol davar ha-nasa b'ruach ha-kodesh, says Rav Schwab, a very interesting thing. When you operate with Ruach HaKodesh, right, that means Hashem's telling you exactly what to do. You're going to do something in the most perfect way possible. Because it's not us guessing, you know, I have to make a choice. I have two meaningful, like the conversation I had with someone yesterday, I have two meaningful opportunities this summer to make a difference in the world. I could go on this program, or I can go on that program. Which one should I go on? So you think about it, you wonder, but if that person could get Ruach HaKodesh, Hashem would say, this is much more wholesome for you. This is what I want from you. When a person operates with Ruach HaKodesh, they see the whole picture. There's a sense of shlemus. Va'al kein to'eles sh'shayeches lavo al yedei ha-ma'isa nichleles ba'ofa shal Ruach HaKodesh. And therefore, when one's actions are being driven by Ruach HaKodesh, it's going to be the all-encompassing decision. And therefore, v'lachein, what does the pasuk say? Right? Or what does the Gemara say? Ma ra'asa Esther. What did Esther see that caused her to invite Haman? That's an interesting way to speak. Why doesn't the Gemara say, you know, what did Esther think to invite Haman? No, she saw something. Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is a form of vision. Right? Lachein ra'asa Esther. Esther saw kekulu tanai v'kekulu amarai. She was able to see with her Ruach HaKodesh the whole picture. Every possible good reason to invite Haman to the party, she thought of. She called echad ve'echad matzah tzad to elis b'davar. Each of the amaram and tanaim, through their more limited view, thought of a reason that Esther might have invited Haman. But Esther, with her Ruach HaKodesh, thought of every reason to invite Haman to the party. V'kulam nichlalim b'maisa shal Ruach HaKodesh hanasa b'tachlis hashleimus. Right? And because of that, Esther, again, was able to envelop herself with this spirit of divine wisdom, and be able to come up with an all-encompassing approach to why she should invite Haman. It connects to the last piece because, again, Esther thought in that moment when she entered into Ahasuerus' room that a little bit she was straying from Hashem, that she's not the complete Avod Hashem, and that God's not going to send the shade to protect me anymore. But the fact that she maintained her Ruach HaKodesh in this moment, where Rav Schwab is describing, proves, I guess, the fact that she wasn't really straying at all from Hashem. She was still able to see with what? Again, with that sense of complete vision, shleimus. She was 100% with Hashem every step of the way. And therefore, Hashem was with her 100% every step of the way. Yeah.
Back to the part of the shade.
Yeah.
Don't we know that they had kids together?
We're going to get to it. We're about to get to it. We're going to get to it. Good question. Yeah.
Remember last year we spoke, there was something like with the...
It wasn't her kid.
Like,
it
wasn't her kid. It's 1/60th, like,
a dream is a 60th of, yeah.
Of death, and like our fire is like,
right.
Like that. Didn't we learn something last year regarding like the Megillus Esther is actually like the complete one or something
yeah.
like that, but the Torah
very good.
Is still 1/60th.
Beautiful.
Like, we're gonna have it.
Great connection.
So like when you see like something like where it says Ra'asa,
beautiful.
Like, seeing it, like that shows like it's like complete, you're seeing all the different.
Very, very good. Yeah, we learned last year, the Chassam Sofer says a completely shocking thing. The Chassam Sofer says that the Or, that the spiritual light that is contained within Megillas Esther, is even greater than the light of the Torah itself. Now, for the Chassam Sofer to say such a thing is not small. To basically, you're arguing that a book with 167 psukim, that's how many psukim are in Megillas Esther. Anyone know any gematrias on that? 167? Should we get started with gematrias? You know what he's saying? There's 167 in the Megillah, 167 psukim in the Megillah. What's the gematria of Vina Hafoch? Because the whole Indian of Purim is Vina Hafochu, to turn everything around. So what's the gematria of Vina Hafoch? Let's see, check it. Start off slow. What do you got, Bella? Vav, Nun, Hey. Hey, Vav, Chaf Sofi, maybe? What? No, regular. In the half of.
One sixty-one.
Vina hafoch. You have the vav.
I get the vav in that
167. Good. 167. Okay. So vina hafoch. So when you're singing vina hafoch, you're saying every word of the Megillah should be transformed into something good. 167. I'll tell you one more 167. That one's for my father. That's my father's chiddush. And Afoch is gematria 167, which is the number of psukim in Megillas Esther. But the who says it? Rav Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz. Who's that? The author of the Chadodi. Also wrote a sefer on Megillas Esther. So he says an amazing remez. He says that 167 is gematria Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. When we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is 167. How we connect that to the Megillah is a good question. But yeah, you could, good. But let's go back to what Jordan was saying. He said an amazing point. Right? The Megillah itself is, according to the Chassam Sofer, and again, we had a whole shiur explaining these ideas, but the Megillah itself is even more complete than the Torah. But that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that the Megillah, right? The Megillah, that's why also you have to read the Megillah from beginning to end. Gemara discusses. If you only heard half of the Megillah, you can't hear the Megillah out of order. Megillah is meant to be read from beginning to end. It's a Dover Shalim. It's very complete. And that's what you see from the heroine of the story, that she maintained her Shlemus in her commitment to Hashem. And that's why she had this Shlemus, a vision of Ruach HaKodesh that was all-encompassing. And that's very good. That fits very nicely with the fact that the Megillah is sort of this all-encompassing Torah book, even though you read it and you say, God's name doesn't even appear in this book. But it's an all-encompassing, it's a very holy book. The Rambam writes that in the future, all of the Svarim of Nevi'im and Ksuvim are going to be batel. Right? All of the Svarim of Nevi'im and Ksuvim are going to be batel with one exception, Megillah Esther. The Rambam says, Megillah is like the Torah, that it's going to last forever. But if you look in the deeper Sfarim, in a certain sense, as insane as it sounds to say such a thing, the Megillah is on an even higher level than the Torah.
For that,
we
also say that, Purim is also the only...
Yeah, Purim is... That's right. The Medrash says that Purim is the only Yom Tov that that we're going to take into the future. Maybe also Yom Kippur. Hanukkah. According to one Nusach. But yeah, you see that these later Yom Tovim, Hanukkah, Purim... Good. 424. You see 424 on the page? Tell everyone about 424.
Where did it say that we're taking
into the future?
Yeah.
That it's the Yom Tov that lasts forever? It's a Medrash and Mishlei.
Yeah.
That says that Purim is forever. New Vevel, what are you saying 424? Not everyone speaks in code. Explain yourself.
The Purim plus Hanukkah, 424, which is the Gematria and Mishlei.
Okay, so... Zev says Purim plus Chanukah in Gematria is 424, which is Gematria Mashiach ben David. Okay? So realize that when Esther was going to Achashverosh, right, you have to realize that she was trying to bring the Gula. Mashiach is Gula. This was also Gula. This was as bad as it ever got in Jewish history. Haman's about to kill us. And Esther goes to the king and she understands, I'm either going to die and Klal Yisrael is going to be killed, or I'm going to bring Mashiach in a certain sense. Right? She was laying the seeds of Mashiach. So that's why when she went to the king, right? She went to the king, the pasuk says, Asher lo kadat, chav dalitav. You see? Going back to the first pasuk on the page, kadas, that word appears a few times in the Megillah, kadat, is 424. Right? Hevesi. Okay, good. Let's not stray too far here. Yeah, shova. No, because she thought this time when she goes willingly, when she submits herself before the king. Even though, again, she's doing it for the holiest reason. She's doing it to save the Jewish people. But a little bit, she's choosing to go to Achashverosh, which means a little bit she's abandoning her commitment to Torah and mitzvos. A married woman doesn't go to sleep with another man. So she's doing it, of course, for the holiest reason. Again, in the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we'll see, actually protected her. Okay? But part of the, one more point that comes out, I'll just say it outside, in the next paragraph, Rav Schwab says, according to the Gemara, when she's sitting at the party with Haman and Achashverosh, and she's about to say, this is the man who's responsible for all of the things I'm, you know, complaining about, and she sticks out her hand, Ish Tsar Va'oyev, Haman Hara Hazeh, this is my enemy, this is the evil one. She points to Haman. The Gemara says she actually pointed to Achashverosh, and then a malach came and moved her hand over to Haman. So says Rav Schwab, why did she point to Achashverosh? You know why? Because with her Ruach HaKodesh, if you were just a human being trying to call out the biggest troublemaker, you point to Haman. Haman's the one who's the biggest threat. And she's asking Achashverosh for help. But her Ruach HaKodesh, her all-encompassing commitment to seeing the truth, meant that she also had to call out Achashverosh. Because in truth, Achashverosh was also a big Rasha. And he was also responsible for what? For writing the Gezerah against the Jewish people. So therefore, because she was operating from a place of Shleimus, of Ruach HaKodesh, of complete truth, she had to also point at Achashverosh, and then the Malach moved her hand over, and pointed to Haman. Okay? Okay. Gevaldik little Torah. Yeah. We don't have a lot of time. Correct, yeah.
Add to 167, there's a really good math on how we get here, but you saw the Abba times 2 with the code.
Sounds great. I'm not a catalyst yet. You have to explain what that means to me.
I don't know why we would multiply by 2.
I have no idea. It's your chiddush. You figure it out. Tell me. I have to figure out your chidusha?
Yeah, you understand
what I'm saying. I don't know what the words are. Okay, now this next piece, the Sfas MS, in many places has the same Torah. And this is a Gevaldik Torah. You know why I picked on Sunday to do these Torahs from Rav Schwab? It was because of this piece. I remembered this piece, and then I started reading that, and he has a lot of such beautiful ideas, so I figured we'd, you know, why not learn most of them? What does the Gemara say on this? Says the Gemara in Megillah Tezayin, with Beis, we're in the bottom left-hand corner. Amr of Yehuda, the Jews had Orah. Orah, Zu Torah. The Jews had Torah. Light is a reference to Torah. V'cheinu Omer, Kiner Mitzvah, V'Torah Or. The Jews had Simcha. What is Simcha? Simcha Zeh Yom Tov. As it says, V'samachta B'chagecha. The Jews had Sason. Sason, says the Gemara, is a code word for Mila. As it says, Sas Anochi Alim Rosecha, reference to Brismila. And Vikar is a reference, Eilu HaTfilin, is a reference to Tfilin. So says Rav Schwab, where it's underlined, 5 lines from the end of the page, Ulefi Pshuto Mashma, Sha'ad Shas HaYeshua Lohayu Oskim B'Dvarim Halalu. What does the Pasuk mean? I don't understand. La Yehudim Haysa, the Jews defeated Haman, and now they had Ora Simcha Sason and Vikar. Or in other words, now they had what? Torah, Yom Tov, Mila, and Tefillin. Says Rav Schwab, did they not have Torah, Yom Tov, Mila, and Tefillin? Is this the Purim story or this is the Hanukkah story? If it's the Hanukkah story, I know that they didn't have Yom Tov, they didn't have Tefillin, and they didn't have Mila. I know that was what the Greeks did. No Shabbos, no Rosh Chodesh, no Bris Mila. But where do we see anywhere in the Purim story that they weren't allowed to do mitzvos? Did Haman make such a decree? Has anyone ever heard this idea before? That Haman, does the Gemara say Haman said you're not allowed to wear tefillin? Haman just says we're going to kill the Jews. That was his whole thing. It wasn't a spiritual war against the Jews. He wanted to just physically kill us. He didn't outlaw keeping kosher or circumcising your children. So what exactly does this mean? Says Rav Schwab, it's such an important idea. And then, this is a little bit of hemshech of that idea. V'yesh lafarish, sha'arei badai hayu lahem Torah v'yom tovu milu tefillin gam lifnei ha'yeshua. Yes, the Jews were still learning Torah, the Jews were still celebrating Yom Tov, circumcising their children, putting on tefillin in the morning, turn the page. Aval haysa ha'torah b'li ora. But their Torah was lacking light. Ora zu Torah. What does it mean, Orezu Torah? The essence of light is not the sun shining in the sky. The essence of light is not having, you know, lights that can be turned on by a switch. The essence of true light is experiencing the inner light of Torah. So were the Jews learning Torah, Chavra? Were the Jews learning Torah? They were learning Torah. But after the salvation of Purim, their Torah became so much more what? Illuminated. They were so much more connected to it. Hayom Tov, yes, of course they had Yom Tov. But it was Beli Simcha. When you're living under Haman and Achashverosh, you're just going through the motions. Hamila Beli Sason, they circumcised their children, but with heavy hearts, not knowing what's going to be with their children. And the tefillin was without what? Without the power of the tefillin, the honor that comes, and the glory that comes with wearing tefillin. Says Rav Schwab, V'acher HaYeshua Nahafochu. Nahafoch, 167. V'acher HaYeshua, and after the salvation, right? Nahafochu, everything got turned inside out and upside down. They started learning Torah, and it felt alive. They felt the aura of the Torah. They celebrated Yom Tov, and it was a true simcha. It gave them the greatest pleasure in the world. La'yehudim ha'isa ora im ha'torah. Yom Tov im simcha. Mila im sason. Tefillin im yakar. They started to really connect deeply to the mitzvahs. That's what happens. When you feel that something's about to be taken away from you, and then you get it back, it totally re-energizes your connection to something. That's the pshat, says the Shem Yishmuel, in Parshas Lech Lecha. That's the pshat in the pasuk at the end of the Tochacha. What does it say at the end of the Tochacha? Remember I told you the pasuk yesterday. Tachas asher lo avadata Hashem Elokecha, b'simcha u'betuv leiv av mirov kol. Because of a lack of simcha, I brought the Holocaust upon you. So he said, what? What kind of crazy system is this? Because we're not so into mitzvahs, so you're gonna put us through these horrible things. So the Shem Yishmuel says, how do I get a person to appreciate tefillin like never before? I put them through the harshest of gullus, to the point that they're not able to wear tefillin. You know what Jews did to put on tefillin during the Holocaust? You know how much they sacrificed? You know what they would give up to put on tefillin? So when you don't have it, when it's taken away from you, you fall wildly in love with it. You cling to it. So that's the pshat, says the Shem Yishmuel. If you have a lack of simcha, Hashem says, I have to take it away from you. And when you don't have it anymore, then you're going to start appreciating it finally. When you can't put on tefillin because there's a decree against you, then you'll start to appreciate it. So the Jewish people didn't appreciate it. They were just robotic about their mitzvahs. But once they saw how much Hashem loved them and He saved them on Purim, all of a sudden the Torah was the most illuminating experience. Yom Tov was such a celebration. Putting on tefillin, they felt empowered by it. Tefillin are referred to as the Klei Zayin, as the weapons of Klal Yisrael. It's like a soldier with a, you know, putting on his uniform. They felt so energized by it. Sfasemes says the exact same thing. A few places in his writings on Purim. He says the exact same yisod. It's a very, very beautiful idea. Okay, next piece. Vatomer Esther, imalamelech tov. Maybe we have time for two more pieces today. Vatomer Esther, imalamelech tov, yinasem gam machar la'yehudim asher b'shushan, la'asos kedas, there you go, Velvel, kedas, 424, kedas hayom. Esther asked permission, this is already the end of the Megillah, it's in Parak Tes. Right? The Jews are fighting back. The Jews are winning the war. Esther says to Achashverosh, can I have one more day? She's asking permission to continue the fight. I want to finish off the rest of our enemies. Can I have the permission of the king, Achashverosh, that the Jews should be allowed to continue to fight their enemies? Right? In Shushan, like they did today. V'asaseres b'nei Haman yislu osam ala eitz, v'yargu b'shushan shalosh meos ish. Achashverosh gives permission. The Jews go out to war. Haman's children are hanged from the gallows, and 300 men are killed in Shushan. Why didn't they kill them the first day? Wasn't enough time? Says Rav Schwab, Levar hatam shalo hargum b'yom rishon. The Jews were in the middle of waging their most important battle, fighting for their lives. So all the enemies of the Jews, like outside of Shushan, they killed them the first day, and then Esther's like, oh, you know, we just need a little more time. Can we get permission to kill our enemies in Shushan? Why didn't they kill them the first day? Why didn't the Jews finish the job the first day? Was it just literally they ran out of time? Nireh she'ba'arei haprazim nikalu ha'yehudim v'lo hismamu m'lasos b'soneim kirtzonam. The Jews, what was the difference between Shushan and outside of Shushan? Ever learned the first Mishnah in Maseches Megillah? Right? What does it talk about? Walled cities and unwalled cities. Yeah? Was Shushan a walled city or an unwalled city? A walled city. So in the Arei HaPrazim, what does it mean, Arei HaPrazim? In the unwalled cities, the Jews gathered together. And they could not delay to do what they needed to do to their enemies. Kaven Shahayu Hasonim Yecholim Livroach. Because they said, if we don't finish off our enemies, there's no walls here to keep our enemies locked in. Right? The enemies could, I don't know, they could run away. They could flee. Livroach means to flee. Sherei lo hayu ha'arim mukafim choma. Right? The enemies were not trapped within the walls, so to speak. They were out in the open. V'gam chashashu shu'alai b'shahosam milinkom nikmasam. If the Jews delay seeking vengeance, ulai yevuto pachar ha'yehuda me'alayim v'yevo me'am e'aretz le'ezras chavrayim. Maybe other people would come to support, you know, these enemies of the Jews. Again, you don't have to assume that every person in the world was an enemy of the Jews, says Rishwab. But maybe if the Jews started killing their enemies, so their enemies would rally support from their friends to protect them. So they felt, what? We have to kill all the people in the open areas immediately. And because they were scared that their enemies are going to run away, or the enemies are going to what? Are going to get support from their friends. So they needed Hashem's help to make sure that they would be able to do what they needed to do. V'lachein, shibdu libam la'avim shav ha'shamayim, v'al yidei zeh v'gavar Yisrael. So because they were nervous, if we don't solve this problem quickly, maybe our enemies are going to run, maybe they're going to garner support and fight back. So they were very nervous. They said, Hashem, you got to help us. This is an emergency. So they trusted in Hashem, and Hashem helped them to be successful. What about in Shushan? Aval be'ir Shushan, where it's underlined. Mako Mishkan Esther Hamalka, u'Mordechai Mishna Lamelech. You know why the Jews at that time didn't take Shushan so seriously? You know why they weren't scared of Shushan so much? You know why they didn't feel there's an immediate need to kill the people in Shushan, the enemies in Shushan? We've got connections in Shushan. Esther, our sister, is the queen. Mordechai, our brother, our cousin, right, is second in command. Don't worry, we'll be able to work that out. We'll use our political connections. Yeah, we'll be able to handle that. Va'ikr sha'ir mukafes choma, and the city is surrounded, so no one's going anywhere so fast. So they were relying a little bit too much on what? On their own military skills, political connections. The enemies are trapped in the city. Enemies, they're not going to be able to escape. We've got this completely under control. And it was getting to the point where the Jews didn't realize that, hey, wait a minute, you know, you're being overly confident and showing the lack of what? Of bitachon in Hashem. They weren't worried the enemies are going to fight back. But this caused them to have what? A lack of bitachon on Hashem. We got this under control. Esther's working it with Ahasuerus in the palace. Everything's working out well there. And Mordechai is very powerful. And Haman's going down. We got this. That's a lack of bitachon. You never have anything. You don't have your next breath if Hashem doesn't want you to have it. You literally couldn't get up out of your seat right now if Hashem doesn't command it to be. So there was a little bit of a too much confidence on behalf of the Jews in Shushan to think that we don't really need Hashem's help so much. Lachein lo zachu letoka fanes shehargu kol akal maleim biyom rishon v'hutzachu liyom sheni. So you know what happened? They were so sure that Shushan was going to be the easiest, you know, the easiest for them to conquer, and it turned out to be the hardest. Because in Shushan they thought they had it under control themselves. So you know what Hashem did? Hashem didn't let them conquer it the first day, and then they realized, you know what? We were a little too confident, and we kind of took Hashem out of the equation. And therefore Esther now says to Ahasuerus, can we have a second day? We didn't finish the job. The fact that they needed the second day, right, was proof to them that you can't do anything without Hashem. It doesn't matter how good your political connections are. Right? Yeah, I'm not nervous about this job interview because I know the people at the company. I'm for sure going to get the job. There's no for sure anything. I like catch myself on a daily basis. When I go to the garage to go pick up my car, because it takes them a little time to bring it down, so I try to call ahead so they can like get it. So I always like when I hang up, I always say, okay, I'll see you. But I've been like very conscious recently To say, like, I'll see you soon, God willing. Who's to say I'm going to make it from my office down the block? I hope to. God forbid. Like, I don't know. I think I will. I'll piteva. According to nature, I think it's a reasonable thing to assume that I'll make it, you know, to my car. But I'll see you soon, says who? What if Hashem doesn't want me to see them soon? What if there's a reason I need to be delayed for an hour? I'm not in charge of that. It's a reminder to myself that I'm not in charge of that. I'm not in charge of leaving my office to walk down the block. If Hashem helps me, Bezrat Hashem, I'll make it to my car and I'll be able to go home. Right? But it's so important for us to never feel overly confident that I've got this totally under control and I don't need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help. And therefore, Biksha Esther, She Yislu B'nei Haman La'ores Yisrael La'hakir B'nisei Hashem. So why does the Pasuk say that as they prepared to fight that battle, to continue that fight on the second day, Haman's children, she asked permission to hang Haman's children from the gallows. Why? Because Esther was trying to hang up a sign to remind Klal Yisrael, did you forget what happened here? Did you forget how not in control we were very, very recently? Don't you realize the hand of Hashem? Don't you realize who we were up against? Don't you realize that, hello, Haman and his family, do you know who they were? These were very important, powerful people. You know what a chiddush it is that we're even got permission to fight back? It's all the Yad Hashem. Don't miss that, says Esther. Recognize the wonders of Hashem. V'yivtuchu b'kadosh baruch hu v'lo b'achoma. Trust in God. Don't trust in the wall. Don't trust in the fact that Shushan's a walled city, so it'll be easy to keep our enemies trapped. They weren't able to win the battle the first day. Hashem was saying that you can't win this battle without me. The second day, they approached the battle with what? With Hashem by their side. V'zeu inyan tikkun Shushan Purim. Now, Chava, you have a new understanding of what Shushan Purim is about now. Four more lines for today. Let's finish this up. Says Rav Shrab, two lines from the bottom. Zeh inyan tikkun Shushan Purim. What is Shushan Purim? Right? The second day for the walled cities. So what is Shushan Purim a celebration of? Right? What is the feeling a Jew needs to try to have on Shushan Purim? How did Shushan Purim come about? It came about by Jews having a lack of bitachon in Hashem and needing to be reminded that even what you think is so easy for you to do is not so easy if Hashem doesn't want it to work out. Shushan Purim is a day of bitachon. And actually there's a lot of interesting things in Chassidus Sfarim about that inyan. About Purim and bitachon, but even more so about Shushan Purim and bitachon. I think we had a shir on it once. We once did a piece, I think, from Rav Avram Shur on it. That Shushan Purim, the day where we focus on the walled cities, shelefi godel habitachon b'Hashem yizgadol hanes. In accordance with one's trust in Hashem, the miracle will become greater. V'im yismayit habitachon niskatin hanes. And if your bitachon is small, then the miracle itself will shrink. V'akol toloi be'amuna she'akadosh baruch hu levado mishon miftach la'amo. And everything depends upon relying on Hashem, that Hashem is the one who supports us in everything and anything. Right? There's no easier or more difficult for Hashem. And that's a really important thing for a person to think about. The Jews thought that conquering Shushan, that's going to be a piece of cake. We got Esther, we got Mordechai, we've got the wall to, you know, in terms of the battleground. It's going to be an easy victory. And it wasn't. Because they thought Esther's going to save us, Mordechai's going to save us, the wall's going to save us. They forgot that Hashem is the one who saves us. Okay, so a lot of really beautiful Torahs from Rav Schwab. Hang on to the sheets. Okay, maybe on Sunday or Monday we'll finish it up next week. Yeah.